मैम क्वेश्चन है कि अकॉर्डिंग टू यू इस्लाम का एसेंस क्या है?
एसेंस
अकॉर्डिंग टू यू
द वेरी वर्ड इस्लाम टेल्स यू व्हाट इज द एसेंस ऑफ इस्लाम. यू नो द रूट वर्ड ऑफ इस्लाम इज सिल्म, SILM. सिल्म मीन्स पीस. So the essence of Islam is peace. There are so many verses in the Quran in this regard. For example, As-sulhu khair. Sulh means peace. Peace is the best. You know, any Western people believe that freedom is the samabonam. But according to Islam, peace is the sampoorna. You know, there is a verse about the paradise in the Quran. Wallahu yadu wa ila daris salam. God calls to the home of peace. It means that the ideal world, which we call paradise, that is Darus Salam. Any hope of peace. So we are required to live in peace, give peace to others. Why? I think that without peace, there is no positive activity. Peace is the basis for all kind of good that we want. Without peace, there is no positive thinking. Without peace, there is no spirituality. Without peace, there is no good relationship between human beings. So all that we want in our world, in our individual life, in family, in society, cannot be achieved without peace. So Islam gives very important on this regard. But I will make it clear that peace is not a matter of belief. It is important due to practical purposes. Our belief is based on monotheism, that is Tawheed, oneness of God. So, as far as the belief is concerned, the supreme thing, greatest good is Tawheed or monotheism. All the teachings of Islam revolve around this belief, God is one. So, oneness of God is the most important thing in Islam. But as far as the practical life is concerned, you cannot achieve anything without peace. So for practical purposes, Islam emphasizes on peace. And as far as the belief is concerned, Islam emphasizes on Tawheed, that is monotheism. This is the essence of Islam.
So, what is you in your center? Is a center for peace and spirituality. What is spirituality?
माना जो center है, center for peace and spirituality, वो कह रहे कि spirituality क्या है?
Yes. I think that peace and spirituality both are two phases of single kind. Peace means external spirituality. Spirituality means inner peace.
Yeah.
And peace means external spirituality. So peace and And peace and spirituality both always coexist. Where there is spirituality, there is peace. And where there is peace in true sense of the word, then there is spirituality. So we believe that these two words are very important for every human being. Every human being. You are free to choose your belief. Belief is a personal choice. Belief is a personal choice. But in this world, you cannot establish normal situation for better living without peace and spirituality. So we believe that religion in terms of belief is a personal choice. But when comes the social life, so in social life, these two are very important. In personal life, spirituality, and in social life, peace. This is our.
So, spirituality, is it something we can find in every religion, or is it something that is exclusively related to Islam?
Yes, it is true that all the religions believe in spirituality. But there is a difference. Other religions or other traditions believe that the source of spirituality is heart. They believe in heart-based spirituality. But we believe, we don't subscribe this concept, because heart is not source of thought. Heart is only for circulation of blood. So we believe in different kinds of spirituality. Although the goal is the same, but source is different. We believe in mind-based spirituality. Our spirituality is based on mind, that is thinking. So we can reach to spirituality only through thinking process. It is not mysterious. When you associate spirituality with heart, then it becomes a mysterious subject. Totally mysterious. But when you associate spirituality with mind, that is scientific subject. Well-known subject. So, although every religion and every tradition believe in spirituality, here we are common. But we believe in that kind of spirituality which is based on mind. That is, you can achieve a spiritual goal only through thinking process, not through any mysterious process.
So, emotions is not related to spirituality, according to you?
Yes, it is associated to spirituality. But emotions are all, the source of emotions are also mind and not heart.
Yeah.
We don't believe that source of emotion or sentiments are heart-based. Heart is nothing except circulation of blood. So everything, including emotions, and a source of everything, including emotions, is mind. This is the difference.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there is no difference.
According to you, how would you describe the situation of Islam and situation for Muslims in India today? There has been tensions in not even the last years, but some years ago in Gujarat, for example, and in other places here in India, there have been tensions between Muslims and Hindus, for example. So, what is your opinion about it?
I have different opinion. Yeah. Generally, Muslims have negative thought about India, generally. But I am quite positive about India. What is the problem? People generally take their ideas through media. And what is India, they know through the media. What is printed in newspaper, what is you listen in TV, you believe this is India. But that is not India. Because media is industry of selected news. Selected news means they are interested only to get negative news. They are not interested in positive news. So, print media and electronic media, both are news industry, but not all news. They are interested only in negative news. So, in about India, those people who try to know about India through media, they are misled, because they get only negative picture of India. I believe that evil is a part of life. Evil is not part of India. In every country, in every nation, in every society, there are some evils. But you have to ignore those parts. And you have to see the positive aspect. So, in India, although there are some evils, but that is not part of India, but part of life, part of nature, part of law of nature. Then, if you study India with positive mind, you can say that India is best for Muslims. Best for Muslims. And you know, there are 57 Muslim countries. But India is best for Muslims. Why? You require two things for development. Peace and freedom. Peace and freedom both are important for any kind of development. So in India, we enjoy both. Peace and freedom both. In other Muslim countries, you cannot find the both. If in some countries there is peace, there is no freedom. And if in some countries, if there is freedom, there is no peace. This is the case of Muslim countries. But in India, we enjoy peace and freedom both. So it is best for us. I think that we are very happy that we are born in India. And we are running a mission, Islamic mission here in India. And everyone knows that there is no restriction at all. We are completely free. We are doing our mission. No decision at all. There is no obstacle. We distribute Quran, we distribute Islamic literatures, we organize Islamic meetings, we propagate Islamic thought, but there is no objection from Hindu side. Then there is another point. Hindus are very special kind of Hindu religion is very special kind of religion. Hindu believe हिंदू पीपल बिलीव इन डाइवर्सिटी इन मेनीनेस ऑफ रियलिटी इट इज वेरी यूनिक आइडिया देयर इज ओनली वन रिलीजियस ग्रुप दैट इज हिंदू हु बिलीव इन मेनीनेस ऑफ रियलिटी सो दे से विद प्राइड that every religion is true. I am right and you are also right. So this kind of belief gives us room. Because they accept us that we are free to adopt Islam as a true religion. We are free to propagate Islam. We are free to practice Islam. And according to their belief, it gives us this opportunity. It is very important. This kind of atmosphere, you cannot find any other society.
How come that, you said earlier that Islam is peace, its basic essence is peace, but how come that in almost of all Islamic countries, there are just three democracies, still real democracies. It's in Indonesia, it's in Mali, this is in Senegal. But in most other Muslim countries, there are no democracy. There are not even peace, actually, in many parts of the Muslim world. How should we understand that?
You have to differentiate between practice and ideology. You are referring some Muslim countries, some Muslim nations, but Muslim countries or Muslim nations are not Islam. The source of Islam is only two, that is Quran and Sunnah. And Muslim, you have to judge Muslims by this criterion. And about democracy, I would say that in Islam gives the Islam acknowledges the democracy. I can say that Islam was the first to introduce democratic. Democratic ideology. In Surah Ash-Shura, there is a verse in the Quran. Amruhum Shura Bainahum. Amruhum Shura Bainahum means their system will be based on consultation. That is the basis of democracy. But now Muslims are, I can say that they are degenerated nation. Degenerate community. Present Muslims are not following Islam according to the Quran and Hadith. They are following their own culture, their own interest. So, you have to differentiate between Islam and Muslim. You have to judge Muslims in the light of Islamic teachings and not vice versa.
According to you, what is the root causes of conflicts between people?
According to you, what is the root cause of conflict in people, among people, according to you?
Interest. Interest is the only reason. Any political interest and material interest, people generally follow their interest. And this world is based on competition. Everyone is free. God Almighty has given freedom to all men, to every human being. So due to this freedom, due to this competition, and due to this self-interest, there are always conflicts between societies. And this will not, you cannot, you have to adjust with this situation. You cannot eliminate conflict. It's not possible to eliminate the conflict because man has his own desire. He has freedom. He has self-interest. All these things are interwoven in nature, in human nature. You cannot change the human nature. It is not possible for anyone to change the human nature. So, if these things are based on nature, so it is but natural that there will be conflict. So, you have to adjust. You have to avoid. My formula is avoid the conflict and avail the opportunities. This is my formula. Avoid the problem and avail the opportunities. Problems are, in conflict is a problem. And a problem is a part of life. People generally take problem as a bad thing. I don't think it is bad. Because problem or conflict creates challenges. Without challenge, there is no development. So what you call conflict, we call it challenge. So without challenge, there is no progress, no development.
No. So according to you, if I understand you right, and then you think like me, so conflicts can be good. Is that correct? Do I understand it? Conflicts can be something good because conflict can lead to some development. Is that what you mean?
Are you saying that, does that mean that according to you, conflict is good because conflict leads to development? Is that what you're saying?
My saying is that conflict is part of nature.
Yeah.
I'm not saying good or bad.
Yeah.
I'm saying that is part of nature.
Yeah.
You cannot eliminate the nature.
Yeah.
So you have to adjust with conflict. Then I say that if you develop this kind of thinking, that you will tolerate the conflict, then it will turn to opportunity. When you take conflict as a bad thing, you try to eliminate it. But if you take conflict as a part of nature, then you will take it as a challenge. This is my formula.
Because at least I think that the most important thing is to learn to solve conflicts in a constructive way. The problem is not, according to me, conflicts. The problem is how people solve conflicts.
According to him, conflict, what he's saying is that people take conflict as a problem. But the focus should be how to solve the conflict. Because that leads to development.
Yes. According to my experience, conflict becomes evil when you react. It is your reaction that turns conflict a bad thing. If you don't react, then there is no problem. So, conflict itself is not a problem. Reaction is the problem. If I tolerate, if I avoid, then there is no problem. But when we react, then there is problem.
I'd like to talk more about that later on, I think, when I come back. Would you be interested to talk to me about that?
Hmm.
मैडम, वो कह रहे हैं बाद में आके आपसे वो डिस्कस करना चाहेंगे. वो जब वेबसाइट देखी थी तो देयर वर मेनी टर्निंग पॉइंट्स दैट ही सॉ ऑन द वेबसाइट आपके रिगार्डिंग योर वर्क. तो वो बाद में डिटेल में इंटरव्यू करना चाहते हैं आपसे.
अच्छा.
तो वो पूछ रहे हैं क्या आ सकते हैं.
हाँ हाँ, बिल्कुल बिल्कुल. इज ओके.
आई एम रियली ग्लैड फॉर दैट बिकॉज़ आई रियलाइज दैट यू हैव बीन इवन बीन in Jamaat-e-Islami But you turn around, and then you went on, and then you turn around, and then you're here. Since I think I'm quite interested in see how people develop, how they change their ideas, what makes them change ideas.
Right.
Remember, I'm a psychologist of religion. So we are interested in stuff like that. But I would like to know a little bit. I think this is my last question. No, I forgot. You were supposed to say something about India.
Yes, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
There was a Hindu guru, a well-known Hindu guru. His name was Acharya Vinoba Bhave. Acharya Vinoba Bhave. He was a disciple of Mahatma Gandhi. He was a great scholar of Hinduism. So he used to say openly that people generally say that I am Muslim alone, I am Hindu alone, I am Christian alone. But I say, he used to say like this, I am Hindu too, I am Muslim too, I am Christian too. So he used to fast and used to pray like Muslim. So Hindu mind is very different mind. They believe that I am true and you are so true. This is their belief. I am true, you are also true. So this gives us a room to work here in India. Because they take us as a follower of different truth. They don't take us as an enemy. But they take it as a friend. This unique feature of India.
Yeah, I think you're right when you're describing the situation. So most the majority of the Muslims in India, because to be a Muslim in a Hindu majority country must be something unique, because Hinduism is a religion that ideally, now I'm not talking about the Hindutva movement, except Christianity, Buddhism, Islam, Judaism, for example. I think it's something really unique to be a Muslim in India. I think that's right. But the question I wanted to ask you a little bit was that, how did you come to realize that non-violence is is something which is intimately related to Islam? How did you come to realize that Islam is non-violence?
Yes, it's a very good question. There are two points. One is that Islam claims to be a religion of nature. Islam is a religion of nature, based on nature. And according to my study, peace is an important part of nature. You know, all the heavenly bodies live in nature. There is no clash between stars and planets. Then all the animals live in peace. There is no such thing like First World War and Second World War in jungles. So peace is a principle of nature, and also it is required by human being that they must live in nature. But at the same time, there is another point, that God Almighty has made a course for for human development. That is challenge. You know, Arnold Toynbee has acknowledged this principle. He says that challenge response mechanism is the path of nature. Challenge response mechanism is the path of all kind of development. So this is part of nature. In this sense, I have to admit, I have to acknowledge that peace is the sum bonum. Then, when I study Islam and I study Prophet's life, I find that Prophet always wanted to live in peace. Sometime he was engaged in war, but all these wars are not full-fledged war. That was like skirmishes. It was not war in true sense of the word. It was like skirmishes. Prophet wanted to establish peace at any cost. The best example is Hudaybiyah Agreement. Hudaybiyah Agreement was between Muhammad and his opponents. And Prophet accepted all those conditions. All the conditions of the opposite side. So, by accepting opposite side's condition, he established peace. This was in Medina, and this example also you can find in Mecca. When Prophet of Islam started his mission in 610 AD, at that time Kaaba was full of idols. Full of idols, but he never objected. He never tried to destroy these idols. He simply ignored. Simply ignored. Why? Because without this this method, it was not possible to establish peace in Mecca. Without peace, he cannot run his mission. So he accepted the presence of idols in Kaaba, and he never objected it. And he was able to carry on his Dawah mission in Mecca smoothly. So happened in Medina. When he migrated to Medina, then Meccan people waged war. They attacked Medina. So it was a difficult situation. Then Prophet of Islam decided to establish peace by accepting their conditions unilaterally. This is called Hudaybiyah Agreement. So there are so many examples. You can see this in my book, Prophet of Peace. That Prophet always tried to establish peace even on unilateral conditions. Why? Because without peace, you cannot do anything. Any studies and prayers and social work or any kind of positive work can be practiced only in peaceful conditions. So, due to these two reasons, I love peace, and also I have discovered that peace is very important part of Islam.
Yeah, I agree with you. I completely agree with you, and I wish that even radical Muslims in Indonesia, for example, could see the same thing, could realize that Islam is basically peace. In the same way as I think that Christianity, in its essence, is a peaceful religion, and Buddhism as well, or Hinduism and Judaism, there are religions of peace, actually. But unfortunately, some Muslims and some Christians and some Hindus and some Buddhists and some so on manipulate their religion for their own desires or for their own, they want to accomplish something. And it's not actually related to religion, at least according to me.
वही एग्री कर रहे हैं और वो कह रहे हैं कि हर रिलीजन बेसिकली पीसफुल है लेकिन देर आर सम एलिमेंट्स इन एवरी रिलीजन जो प्रॉब्लम क्रिएट करता है. तो वो कह रहे हैं आप जो कह रहे थे उससे पहले उन्होंने कहा कि वो एग्री करते हैं उस चीज को कंप्लीटली.
देन देयर इज अनदर पॉइंट. दिस पॉइंट आई हैव डिस्कवर्ड फ्रॉम इस्लाम that there is difference between personal life and social life. So according to the law of nature, you can follow ideals in your personal life. When comes your personal life, you can follow ideals, idealism. But when comes the social life, it is impossible. It becomes impossible. Because there are differences, there are problems, there are interest, class of interest. So, Islamic parabola is, adopt idealism in your personal life. But, when comes the social affairs, you have to accept the status quo. So, any idealist in your personal life, and status quoist in social life. This is the Islamic parabola. Is it clear?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I am idealist in my personal life, but at the same time I am status quoist in social life, even in my family. I readily adopt status, accept the status quo, although I am idealist in my personal life. Is it clear?
Yeah. He always says to us that be practical when it comes to social affairs.
Yeah.
And in my personal life, be idealist.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Because when it comes by personal life, there is no rival. I am owner of my personal life. I can adopt any kind of idealism.
Right.
But in society, even in family, there are some other persons. Their taste, their ideology, their way of thinking is different. So, to avoid with differences, to avoid clash, I have to adopt status quoism. This is the Islamic formula. Is it clear?
Yeah, it's clear. So, how many people belong to Center for Peace and Spirituality or related to, do you have any idea about that?
Many, because you know we have chapters.
Yeah.
As I was explaining you downstairs, yeah. In India and outside India. So, and we have a very informal setup.
Yeah.
So, there are multiple chains.
Yeah.
In localities, yeah. In areas, yeah. In cities. So, we've never kept a track.
No.
I mean, in Kashmir alone, we were planning to go.
Yeah.
There are thousands of workers there, all through the valley.
Yeah.
So
if I go to Kashmir, could you let
yes.
me come into contact with some people
yeah,
there?
Yeah. Sure, we'll do that.
Yeah. In Srinagar?
Yes.
इनको बताइए कि हमने वो डान और कश्मीर छापे हैं.
As part of his, you know, decades of work that is going on in Kashmir.
Yeah.
So, he's been writing extensively.
Yeah.
So, he also wrote a booklet, Dawn of Kashmir.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that on the internet.
On the internet.
Yeah.
So, it's been printed in Urdu, in English.
Yeah.
And that's been spread extensively in Kashmir.
Yeah.
So, he feels that there is, you know, totally new chapter which has unfolded in Kashmir. Kashmir is not what it was earlier.
Yeah.
So, people now have gone in for change.
Yeah.
They have accepted change to a very large extent. There is much reduced violence.
Yeah.
If you compare it with 50 years back.
Yeah.
Today, if you go to Kashmir,
you will have to do your booking 6 months in advance.
Yeah.
It's totally chock-a-block. You know, hotels booked, those boards are all full.
Yeah.
And the moment you land at the airport, it's all, you know, it'll seem like a marketplace.
Yeah.
So tourism has gone up because of peace.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, the CPS workers in Kashmir have been doing for so many years. So when you go there, there are professors in universities who are involved in this mission.
Yeah.
And there are activists, social workers, students. So we'll definitely make you meet, you know, two important people.
That would be great.
Yes.
That would be possible. So, but this time I think I will say thanks. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Inshallah.
What time is it?
It's 7:55.
Yeah. So it's getting late. I have to pack my things tonight. But hopefully, inshallah, I will be back in India in October.
Inshallah.
And if it would be possible for me to meet you again,
inshallah.
It would.
Inshallah.
I would be so glad.
And convey our regards to Matthias.
We look
forward to his meeting in December.
Yeah, that's great. I will tell him that you know about him.
We exchanged a couple of mails.
Yeah,
so it's very interesting, you know, you get to meet him twice before he comes.
that would be so great. Because when I come back, if I have an interview, I would like to talk a little bit much more what happened in your life. And I could send you the questions before, or at least some kind of structure what I want to talk with.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. Sounds good?
Yeah.
Yes, that's good.
Yeah. Thank you so much. One more thing.
thank you.
I'd like to talk more about that later on, I think, when I come back. Would you be interested to talk to me about that?
मैडम वो कह रहे हैं बाद में आके आपसे वो डिस्कस करना चाहेंगे वो जब वेबसाइट देखी थी तो देयर वर मेनी टर्निंग पॉइंट्स दैट ही सॉ यू नो ऑन द वेबसाइट आपके रिगार्डिंग योर वर्क तो वो बाद में डिटेल में इंटरव्यू करना चाहते हैं आपसे
अच्छा
तो वो पूछ रहे हैं क्या आ सकते हैं
हाँ हाँ बिल्कुल बिल्कुल ओके
इज ओके आई एम रियली ग्लैड फॉर दैट बिकॉज आई रियलाइज दैट यू हैव बीन इवन बीन इन जमात Islami, but you turn around and then you went on and then you turn around and then you're here. So it's, I think I'm quite interested in see how people develop, how they change their ideas, what makes them change ideas.
Right.
Remember, I'm a psychologist of religion. So we are interested in stuff like that. But I would like to know a little bit. I think this is my last question. No, I forgot. You were supposed to say something about India.
Yes, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
There was a Hindu guru, a well-known Hindu guru. His name was Acharya Vinoba Bhave. Vinoba Bhave. He was a disciple of Mahatma Gandhi. He was a great scholar of Hinduism. So he used to say openly that people generally say that I am Muslim alone, I am Hindu alone, I am Christian alone. But I say, he used to say like this, I am Hindu too, I am Muslim too, I am Christian too. So he used to fast and used to pray like Muslim. So Hindu mind is very different mind. They believe that I am true and you are also true. This is their belief. I am true, you are also true. So this gives us a room to work here in India. Because they take us as a follower of different truth. They don't take us as a as an enemy, but they take it as a friend. This unique feature of India.
I think you're right when you're describing the situation. So most, the majority of the Muslims in India, because to be a Muslim in a Hindu majority country must be something unique, because Hinduism is a religion that ideally, now I'm not talking about the Hindutva movement, except Christianity, Buddhism, Islam, Judaism, for example. I think it's something really unique to be a Muslim in India. I think that's right. But the question I wanted to ask you a little bit was that, how did you come to realize that non-violence is is something which is intimately related to Islam? How did you come to realize that Islam is non-violence?
Yes. It's a very good question. There are two points. One is that Islam claims to be a religion of nature. Islam is a religion of nature, based on nature. And according to my study, peace is the an important part of nature. You know, all the heavenly bodies live in nature. There is no clash between stars and planets. Then all the animals live in peace. There is no such thing like First World War and Second World War in jungles. So peace is a principle of nature. And also it is required by human being that they must live in nature. But at the same time, there is another point, that God Almighty has made a course for human development, that is challenge. You know, Arnold Toynbee has acknowledged this principle. He says that challenge response mechanism is the path of nature. Challenge response mechanism is the path of all kinds of development. So this is part of nature. In this sense, I have to admit, I have to acknowledge that peace is the sambhavanam. Then, when I study Islam and I study Prophet's life, I find that Prophet always wanted to live in peace. Sometime he was engaged in war, but all these wars are not full-fledged war. That was like skirmishes. It was not war in true sense of the word. It was like skirmishes. Prophet wanted to establish peace at any cost. The best example is Hudaybiyah agreement was between Muhammad and his opponents, and Prophet accepted all those conditions, all the conditions of the opposite side. So by accepting opposite sides condition, he established peace. This was in Medina, and this example also you can find in Mecca. When Prophet of Islam started his mission in 610 AD, at that time Kaaba was full of idols. Full of idols, but he never objected. He never tried to destroy these idols. he simply ignored. Simply ignored. Why? Because without this this method, it was not possible to establish peace in Makkah. Without peace, he cannot run his mission. So he accepted the presence of audience in Kaaba, and he never objected it. And he was able to carry on his Dawah mission in Makkah smoothly. So happened in Medina. When he migrated to Medina, then Meccan people waged war. They attacked Medina. So it was a difficult situation. Then Prophet of Islam decided to establish peace by accepting their conditions unilaterally. This is called Hudaybiyah Agreement. So there are so many examples. You can see this in my book, Prophet of Peace, that Prophet always tried to establish peace even on unilateral conditions. Why? Because without peace, you cannot do anything. Any studies and prayers and social work or any kind of positive work can be practiced only in peaceful conditions. So due to these two reasons, I love peace, and also I have discovered that peace is very important part of Islam.
Yeah, I agree with you. I completely agree with you. And I wish that even radical Muslims in Indonesia, for example, could see the same thing, realize that Islam is basically peace. In the same way as I think that Christianity, in its essence, is a peaceful religion, and Buddhism as well, or Hinduism and Judaism, there are religions of peace, actually. But unfortunately, some Muslims and some Christians and some Hindus and some Buddhists and some so on manipulate their religion for their own desires, or for their own, they want to accomplish something. And it's not actually related to religion, at least according to me.
क्या कहना?
मैंने वही agree कर रहे हैं और वो कह रहे हैं कि हर religion basically peaceful है, लेकिन there are some elements in every religion जो problem create करता है. तो वो कह रहे हैं, आप जो कह रहे थे उससे पहले उन्होंने कहा कि वो agree करते हैं उस चीज को completely.
Then there is another point. This point I have discovered from Islam, that there is difference between personal life and social life. There is difference between personal life or social life. So according to the law of nature, you can follow ideals in your personal life. When comes your personal life, you can follow ideals, idealism. But when comes the social life, it is impossible. It becomes impossible. Because there are differences, there are problems, there are interests, clash of interest. So Islamic formula is adopt idealism in your personal life. But when comes the social affairs, you have to accept the status quo. So any idealist in your personal life and status quoist in social life. This is the Islamic formula. Is it clear?
Yeah.
And I am idealist in my personal life, but at the same time I am status quoist in social life, even in my family. I readily adopt status, accept the status quo. although I am idealist in my personal life. Is it clear?
He always says to us that be practical when it comes to social affairs.
Yeah.
And in my personal life, be idealist.
Yeah, that's right.
Because when it comes by personal life, there is no rival. I am owner of my personal life. I can adopt any kind of idealism. But in society, even in family, there are some other persons. Their taste, their ideology, their way of thinking is different. So, to avoid with differences, to avoid clash, I have to adopt status quoism. This is the Islamic formula. Is it clear?
Yeah, it's clear.
Are my ideas are clear?
What?
He's asking, are my ideas clear?
Yeah, sure. So, what is your opinion about Gandhi? Mahatma Gandhi?
I take Gandhi as myself is a guardian, but not in terms of methodology. I am guardian in terms of non-violent activist. Gandhi was Hindu. I'm not a Hindu. I'm Muslim. But my methodology is based on non-violence. So I believe in non-violent activism. In this sense, I say that I am guardian, not in the sense of religion.
So, how many people belong to Center for Peace and Spirituality or related to? Do you have any idea about that?
Many, because we have chapters.
Yeah.
As I was explaining you downstairs in India and outside India, so, and we have a very informal setup.
Yeah.
So, there are multiple chains
in
localities, in areas, in cities. So, we've never kept a track.
No.
I mean, in Kashmir alone, we were planning to go.
Yeah.
There are thousands of workers there, all through the valley.
Yeah.
So
if I go to Kashmir, could you let me come into contact with some people there?
Yeah, sure, we'll do that.
Yeah. In Srinagar?
Yes.
इनको बताइए कि हमने वो डॉन और कश्मीर छापी है।
As part of his decades of work that is going on in Kashmir, so he's been writing extensively.
Yeah.
So he also wrote a booklet, Dawn over Kashmir.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that on the internet.
On the internet.
Yeah.
So it's been printed in Urdu, in English,
and
that's been spread extensively in Kashmir.
Yeah.
So he feels that there is totally new chapter which has unfolded in Kashmir.
Yeah.
Kashmir is not what it was earlier.
Yeah.
So people now have gone in for change.
Yeah.
They have accepted change to a very large extent. There is much reduced violence.
Yeah.
If you compare it with 50 years back.
Yeah.
Today, if you go to Kashmir, you will have to do your booking 6 months in advance.
Yeah.
It's totally chock-a-block. Hotels booked.
Yeah.
Those boats are all full.
Yeah.
And the moment you land at the airport, it's all, it'll seem like a marketplace.
Yeah.
So tourism has gone up because of peace.
Yeah.
And that's what the CPS workers in Kashmir have been doing for so many years.
Yeah.
So when you go there, there are professors in universities who are involved in this mission, and there are activists, social workers, students.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely make you meet one or two important people.
That would be great.
So meet more ladies of the mission.
Yeah.
That is Sadia.
Yeah.
She is a research scholar, and that's Sufia. She's also part of the mission. Very active.
Yeah.
And Maria, she does programs on television on Islam for kids.
Ah,
And she has a master's in Islamic studies.
Yeah. Here in India?
In India, and she has a science background. She did her graduation in physics.
Physics?
And then after that, she's moved to Islamic studies.
Okay.
Now she's planning to do her PhD.
Here in Delhi?
Yes. So, and meanwhile, you know, she tries to educate the kids on the spirit of Islam, the value system, through television programs.
So, but this time I think I will say thanks. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Inshallah.
What time is it?
It's 7:55.
Yeah. So it's getting late. Hopefully, inshallah, I will be back in India in October. Inshallah. And if it would be possible for me to meet you again, it would.
Inshallah.
I would be so glad.
And convey our regards to Matthias.
We look
forward to his meeting in December.
Yeah, that's great. I will tell him that you know about him.
He's changed a couple of mails.
Yeah,
so it's very interesting, you know, you get to meet him twice before he comes.
that would be so great. Because when I come back, and if I have an interview, I would like to talk a little bit much more what happened in your life. And I could send you the questions before, or at least some kind of structure, what I want to talk about.
That's good.
Yeah, sounds good?
Yeah.
Yes, that's good.
Yeah. Thank you so much. One more thing.
Thank you.
1st August, conversation with Swedish professor Mr. Thomas from Sweden, Umeå University.